Recording in progress.
All right, tell me this lizard story.
First of all, Desiree, it's not even really a story. It's much more of like a theory.
Okay.
So like, have you ever been to like Costa Rica or anywhere in Latin America?
Yes.
Okay. Have you seen their flipping lizards and how they're bigger than probably your whole body and they look like reptiles?
Yes, they're like crazy stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've been glancing at these damn iguanas in Houston, but the hotter it is getting, the bigger these lizards. These things are mad. This could take out my dog. Like, they're pretty.
Welcome to Texas.
I genuinely think we're going to get bigger lizards as global warming heats us up. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure. Why not?
Either, I don't know if they're coming upwards and they're like migrating and the other ones are going north, or if these boys are just growing, you know? They're looking built for tough. Like, they'll tear your house down. You know what I mean?
Do you know what's so funny? I think because I'm in like a planned development that I don't see many bugs. I think it would freak my wife out anyway, but like, I don't even have any lizards, no bugs, no. Like, it's weird.
Well, do you plants?
Yeah. I mean, I have worms and stuff, but I don't have massive lizards running around my house.
Yeah, I mean, they're not like, we're not like housing them. They're not like, they don't have their own bed or anything. Like, we're not like bringing them home. I mean, they're already home, I guess. Whatever. Maybe you're right. Maybe they should have a bedroom. Be right back. Gotta go to Pottery Barn and get a bed.
Welcome to Talentless, the podcast that's all HR, all talent, and zero fluff. Hosted by industry talent leaders Desiree Goldie and Ashley King, and made for recruiters who think of talent outside of the box. They're here to dig into the heart of what makes workplaces tick and sometimes blow up. They are not afraid to get into the messy, the meaningful, and the downright motivating. So buckle up, because they're here to make you the best in the business. Now, let's get to work.
Enough about the lizard, folks. Welcome to another episode of Talentless. Today we are talking industry nuances. Recruiting is recruiting until it isn't. So I just want to say, it is. It's so true. Try using your tech hiring playbook to hire a nurse. Try ghosting a union electrician and see what happens. Today we're getting into the industry-specific nuances that recruiters must understand to succeed, because what works in one vertical might fall completely in another. Let's get it going.
Whoa! So this episode today, we are literally going to break down the recruiting game across four major industries. We kind of split these based off of our actual experience since we've been in seat in these, and we felt that this is where we could really add our best flavor. So I, in my career, have teetered in between tech and environmental. So I pretty much go in between, like, tech startup, apps dev development style, software engineering, that type of house. And then in my career, I've gone back to very large enterprise, Fortune 100, 200 organizations that have a lot of red tape, move soupy doopy slow, and also happen to be in the environmental and industrial services sector. So that is the part I'm going to talk about today. Desiree, what section are you going to talk
about
today?
Gosh, I am talking, I don't know, I've done so much type of recruiting, and this is like going to probably be a huge topic between this, because I do believe that if you're a great recruiter, you'll figure it out. But I am talking healthcare, and I am talking, what else am I talking, Ashley?
Hospitality.
I don't even know why I forgot that. That's where I got my start.
That's literally,
I don't know.
Talking about.
I just pretend the first half of my life never happened.
Plot twist. This isn't even Desiree in the episode. It's a lizard.
Oh my God.
That's why she don't know. I'm on to you.
Oh my God. No, I do know. Healthcare, and we're going to talk hospitality, because I do think they're very nuanced. And I think both Ashley and I have probably recruited for just about everything, but this is what we know the best. So let's start with tech. Let's get it going.
So tech... what a beautiful baby. First of all, in its origin, Tech was highly, highly shaped, I would have said, by its geography. So it is a location-driven industry right off the bat. Just like oil and gas is Houston and Gulf Coast, I would say that Tech is going to be, obviously, your Silicon Valley, California, big startups coming out of there. Your other places, you have a few other Silicons. So you have the Silicon Bayou, which is New Orleans. You also have Georgia, Hotlanta. That is a hotbed for a lot of tech startups as well. You have Little Silicon Hill Country, which is Austin, which has Google, is now home to Tesla, a lot of other big places. So I would say one thing that you need to know whenever you're going into the tech business is like, if you're someone who cares about diversifying your pipeline and cares about getting into other communities, sometimes it's kind of hard because they're not actually located everywhere. Like, it wasn't until 2020, whenever everyone went remote, that now people who were out of Virginia had an opportunity to work for Meta or to work for, well, Virginia actually might not be the best example. Maybe there's a Meta site out there. But whatever. Montana. Okay. I don't know. Just somewhere in the boonies. All right. And now they could work there and they could get that experience. They could get that logo and that associated a whole different value. I will say a lot of the reason that I teeter into tech, I ain't gonna lie, is because of the paycheck. You're going to make Silicon Valley wages and be in a mom and pop environment. And hey, what a beautiful life.
What a beautiful life. Well, it's so funny. You know how I feel about tech recruiting. Right? Mm-hmm. Done it, been there, totally in it, right? But, like, I can't stand it. And then I know people are going to be like, what are you talking about? You know, I have, so my vibe and the high energy that I bring to recruiting probably doesn't vibe with every software engineer. So sometimes we get on these calls and we're like, we're just like sitting in silence and I'm like, hey, blah, blah. And they're like, oh my gosh, you're overwhelming me.
You want to know something? There was a time that I had a call with a manager, and I'm a little peppy steppy until I catch your drift, and then I'll try to mimic your energy. But I was just, I guess, misreading this guy. I don't know, giving him benefit of the doubt and chalking it up to me, I will say. But I'll never forget. I was like, okay, bye. And he thought he hung up, and he went,
oh,
and
geez.
I was like, oh, shoot. I was like, I definitely am sucking the energy out of this poor dude. So I just stuck to emails for that poor guy for the rest of my time. Not going to lie. Read the room, y'all. Even the Zoom
read
room.
Read the room.
Read the Zoom room.
You know, I think for me, it's when we get into, like, the tech world, it's the 17 different programs and your hiring manager being like, no, they need Python, this version of, like, you know, 20 years ago. And I'm like, dude, you know, I don't know that I really want to go look for this thing. I do think it's its own entity and its own kind of like world that you live in. And I mean, and that's why there's so many roles that come out that say like recruiter, technical recruiting, because I do believe it is its own nuance and its own like special beast. And when you are good at it, you're really good at it. But when you're not or don't understand all of those things, you really can get stuck. Right. Yeah. And you could really have a hard time. Really, really. It's not my favorite thing to do. Yes, I can absolutely nail it because I try to nail every project, but it is not my favorite.
Yeah. Well, and role specific, I would say there are definitely nuances in that. But as far as like the industry itself, I would say that there are like interesting just little things that you wouldn't know unless you got in there. So like one, the environment of people is completely different. If you go into enterprises, there are like adults in the room.
Yeah.
Like whenever you're in a tech startup, like somehow you're the adult in the room and the whole time you're like, wait, I need an adult. We all need an adult right here, right now, so fast. But that's kind of the beauty of the startup is like we're all on this boat, and because we see each other all so equally, you're all willing to kind of toss up your hand and be like, hey, let me help. Let me do this. Let me do that. And to be honest, it's kind of a cool place place to be in. Yeah. Everything's gray. We're all agile. We're all having to stay in lockstep and key. The way you communicate changes, like everything, especially tech is big on remote, big on hybrid, which means that you have to have some policies and practices in place to ensure that you can actually do that and provide adequate experience to your employees. Yeah. And so that type of thing, where now what used to be you would go down the hall and knock on someone's door is, well, I have to put it in like what feels like a 4-page email, and we all work asynchronously. Right. And so it's just, it's a very different type of culture, type of vibe. It is very much move fast, break things. Yeah. And it is very much do and seek forgiveness later, I would say most times. One thing that I learned about the tech space that I found to be quite interesting, specifically for talent and specifically as someone who is trying to be the head of talent or manage talent. And that is this: whenever companies start in the garage, one, this is their brain baby. Like, right. This is their whole world, their whole girl, and their truck. Like, this is all of the things in one. So whenever you're talking about like talent attraction and branding, and you're trying to say, hey, no one knows who the hell this company is, and I'm sorry that we don't have 4-star Michelin chefs trying to break down the door, but we still have to hire people who can do the job super duper well, and have all of the skill set that we need without offending them by saying we have no brand, no following, no one knows we exist. Every single person we find is a dry outreach. Right. And I can't tell you how many different startups have that same instance to where who they hire is super, because it has been a garage. So who you let in the garage is like one out of a million, right? And they kind of keep that same funnel practice, which isn't bad, but it creates an interesting layer of like how you proceed with explaining the talent attraction and branding versus this is their baby, and you cannot tell them their baby's ugly, or you cannot tell them their baby's unknown, or anything like that. So it's a very interesting way you flow about. Another thing is, because they've always been in the garage, they may not actually know how to measure the success of talent. And they may actually not know how to appreciate the function of talent.
That I agree.
And holy smokes, was that something that I did not know? Is like, you have to teach it. And it's crazy, because if they, most of them, they had one job out of college, came up with a great idea, moved to the garage, and have had success since. So, I mean, we're the knowledge base that we're dealing with is so small, and the impressionism is so deep, that everything is like what you would think could be like, this is the best top tier A plus you could ever have. And they're like, that's cool. And it's like, you don't get it.
Like, you don't understand.
You don't understand.
I found this purple squirrel in the middle of the woods, and you better appreciate it. And they don't.
Honestly. Yeah. And so very end is, things are different whenever you're in a FANG or like a VC backed like turn and burn type cycle, and you'll know that once things also get bought by PE, things change, and a lot of that happens in tech.
Don't you agree with me too that there's like a different standard of professionalism in tech? Like, when they show up in hoodies and like, you know, into their interviews, and I see this on LinkedIn all the time, people complaining somebody showed up in a hoodie. First of all, I don't care what you show up to, but in tech, it's like a different world. No one's showing up like dressed to the nines, you know? They're like, I live in a garage basement with my computer and my snacks. Like, I'm not trying to impress you. I want to wear my hoodie.
Literally, you want to know something hilarious to me? Because a lot of my clients were tech-based clients, I had to go to San Francisco a lot. And I'm going to tell you right now, there is no way to tell if this man next to me is homeless or the owner of a $9 billion startup, because they are dressed the exact same. They will have holy t-shirts, chilling, like literally the, and just so you know, secret sauce, look at the shoes. That's how you
tell. Oh my gosh, that's how you tell.
That's how you tell. I've gone to San Francisco that many times and I was like, I am confused as to, because literally I was like, this man is homeless. Should I offer him a meal? And then he popped in his Ferrari and I was like, well, F me. Who am I? Like, what am I doing? So I say all this.
Well, you know, the sneaker game is always, if you're a sneaker person, you can always tell this telltale sign by the sneaker game.
Which, you know, annoys me so much because I really don't have that many great shoes. So I'm like, people probably look at mine and are like, yeah, she's homeless. Okay. So, like, that's the hard part. All right. Hospitality.
Yeah. Now. So this is, I'm sorry I forgot about you all, you hospitality recruiters out there, but I did this for a long time. I know they're probably mad. They're probably like, we are never listening again.
I think we did that last episode. You offended all the recruiters.
I know. Well, this is my job.
We have no listeners anymore. Sorry, guys. Just back to our moms. Those are the only two we have now.
That's right. Thanks, Mom. So let's talk about hospitality recruiting, which is its own beast and probably has the opposite of what I believe tech has, right? In hospitality recruiting, I believe you're hiring for the attitude, not necessarily the aptitude all the time, right?
I know.
Boom. Yeah, so those, because I do believe that person becomes a reflection of that brand, right? If you're a server, if you're the person at the front of the lobby, if you're the general manager of a hotel, if you're all of these things, you reflect that brand itself. And that becomes so important as you start to recruit for this person. And unlike in tech and hoodies and things like that, if you're hiring for the head of a resort, right, you are hiring for the look and feel of them because they need to represent that brand, right? And if the interview process is clunky or weird or off-putting, they're like, I'm out. There's a million of these jobs out here that I could go get. And so you have to make the best first impression about the brand itself, what they kind of will represent and how they best can reflect that. And it's been a journey for me because hospitality recruiting, well, let's talk about ghosting, okay? It's like unheard of the amount of times you can have a scheduled interview and no one shows up, right? Or you have these job fairs and you hire a bunch of people and no one shows up on the first day, right? This is a high volume moment that really takes a lot of work and it can be super frustrating. It can be super, it feels sometimes like you're not making any headway, that you might have had 10 interviews scheduled in one day and two showed up, right? And that can be hard to hit metrics. It can be hard to, and then you also have this high, like, kind of turnover rate. They go into the role and then they don't show up for 3 days and it's, you're just constantly backfilling. I believe there's a special type of person that does high volume recruiting. I believe there's a special type of person that can be in the hospitality field and do this type of recruiting because it can be the most frustrating type of recruiting. And the salaries aren't always huge, right? Mm-hmm. You're asking people to take a salary that you're like probably wouldn't even work for yourself sometimes. And that is, you have to sell the dream. Right? And it becomes more of a sales pitch sometimes than it becomes about them and their actual skill set you bring to the table. And I was in this for years and did it for bars and clubs and hotels and resorts. And I will tell you that for me, I was like, okay, I have to get out after a certain number of years because I was like, this is the most frustrated I've ever been in getting people to have a job. And you should think, like, as recruiters, we're like, don't they want a job? They should just show up and, like, do everything they're supposed to do. That does not happen in hospitality. Yeah. Recruiting is super frustrating.
Yeah. I will say I feel like the EVP for hospitality is very, like, a specific type. Like, I would honestly say, like, lifestyle and status in my mind. Like, I will also say whenever I'm thinking of hospitality, I'm thinking of, like, the bottle service girls.
Well, those two. Right?
Yeah, that's what I think of whenever I'm thinking of hospital. I don't know why I go back to like 18-year-old club at Rich's nights, but I'm like, because they would always be like, "I am the hospitality associate," and I'm like, "Thank you so much. Can I have another?" Whatever it is that's going.
Down. Can I have another Jello shot?
Can I have another everything? But yeah, so interesting.
Yeah, but I do think there are things that can indicate it. You learn in hospitality recruiting, you do learn these things like really quickly. You're like, who showed up and followed up about their interview? Who showed up to the interview, right? Let's schedule it at a time that it's going to work for them. And sometimes that's at night, right? Or sometimes it's really early in the morning. It's like, it's not on your 9-to-5 schedule. I remember working for a big hotel brand and having to schedule all my interviews from 5 to 9 o'clock. That was it. That was, people were unwilling to do it any other time. And so my day fluctuated. It wasn't a 9-to-5 day. And I got the most hires during that time period. And so I think there's a whole different kind of scheduling, brand awareness, and all of those things that come with doing hospitality recruiting. It's a beast in its own, just like tech. It's very different, right?
Yeah. Well, and the persona of who's in hospitality, just like you said, like when they sleep, eat, wake, and work is a very different time than everyone else. Because if hospitality is what it is, that means you're serving people, usually others. And so that means others have to be able to go do those things, which means it's often an off times. So you're exactly right. The times that you would have to work would then reflect when they would, you know, be available to do that. So
my last thing on this is that bias is rampant in this recruiting.
No doubt.
I cannot tell you the amount of work I've had to do with leaders and hiring managers in this space about the bias that they bring to the table every time we're trying to recruit somebody. And it's unbelievable. And this goes for, you know, races, this goes for women, this goes for, I mean, it could go for disabilities, it goes for everything, the spectrum in this industry is, I don't think people realize how much it is rampant, but bias is rampant. In hospitality recruiting, it's unbelievable. It really is.
The fact that once we started talking about it, my brain went to bottle service girl.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Like, immediate buy.
Right.
So, no. And I get that. And not only that, because people associate company brand with how well your conduits of the company, i.e. employees, look.
Right.
And so it's the Abercrombie and Fitch model. It's if we hire what we want, it will attract the customers that we want, and that's the clothes we want on those people.
Yeah.
And so it was a very like linear thought process that evokes this type of
Absolutely bias. And talk about even just looks, like you said. Yeah. Sometimes it's like, she's not pretty enough. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, how do we just, it's just unreal. It's unreal. Okay, I could go on about this forever, but let's move on to industrial.
This episode is brought to you by DEI Labs, re-educating corporate America with immersive data-driven DEI training for HR and hiring pros. Ready to shift systems and spark real change? Visit DEI-labs.com to get started. Need a resume that actually works? Resume Writing is a female-owned team of recruiting pros helping job seekers land the roles they deserve. Get expert help at resumewriting.com.
Okay. So, like, I love industrial environmental, y'all. Like, please slow down and hear me out, because no matter what part of the company you're working for, your 40 hours a week, for the most part, are going towards some form of sustainability on the actual earth that all of us live on. So, like, it is the most neutral power play of a way to give back to this planet and this Earth that gives to literally everyone. It's indiscriminate. And I love that. I love that no matter what I'm doing in these 40 hours that I'm contributing, it's going to that overall mission. And to be honest, that's one of the number one values that DEI Labs built in DEI DNA is how do you make your money? And how ethical is it? And what is the impact that it actually makes on the globe and the world and our citizens, etc. And so to me, like I said, it's just, it has a whole different meaning of work than it does whenever I'm working for perhaps someone else's dream, you know, CEO in the garage startup and making that happen. Is that meaningful? Absolutely. Does it contribute to a bigger cause? Not always. Right. And so that's where this really comes in. But there's definitely nuances of the environmental and industrial sector because most of the times these are enterprises because it is an industry that has existed and will exist forever. We as humans will always create waste. We will always have trash. We will always have things left over. And in this current world, it needs to be upcycled, recycled, reused. I don't know who needs to hear this, but everything that has on this planet is still on this planet, at the very least in the ether, if Elon shot it up to the moon. But everything's still here and everything just gets remixed up and recreated again in a new form. And the hard part is if we're not doing it right, we're making small weapons because of how many chemicals we're using to do it versus undoing it and leaving it in its state and upcycling it as what it is. So I say all this to say some of the nuances in this is that you have a big mesh of white collar and blue collar. And I mean, you're talking polar people. So these, you have gentlemen who are dealing and ladies who are dealing with waste all day, high hazardous in these hazmat suits, sweating in 110 degree heat all day, that still somehow have coordination and correlation to someone who is in a fully air-conditioned office, only works with technology. And so there are these two very separate partners that you serve in environmental. And so it really gives you the gamut. And so all of your candidate selection processes, all of those things are going to be very intricate because you may have CDL drivers who, as long as they've worked somewhere for 1 year and they breathe, hire them. Right. And honestly, they leave for 50 cents. So that is a revolving door of talent. Versus if you're hiring for someone that is a manager or a director, if they haven't stayed somewhere more than 5 years, then that's not a good look. Right. And that may indicate that they leave somewhere for 50 cents, which is crazy. And so, because that wouldn't be that type of persona. And so the personas that were you try to attract for in these type of businesses, it just really is so diverse. And I love that because to me, the blue collar really feels like home. Like if you go to plants, incinerators, recycling, MRF sites, anything like that, it's just very homey for me personally. Yeah.
So, isn't shift work like a thing too? Like what shift you're offering?
Yeah.
Like, you know, that third shift nobody wants or that first shift everybody wants. And it's like, and you call them and you're like, it's third shift. They're like,
There's specific, so you can have a DuPont schedule, which is like, it's a rotating schedule. And so there are 12 hour shifts that just rotate. It's like, there is a exact like acronym and place for it, but it's usually like two on, three
two
on,
four,
something like that.
Yeah.
And they rotate. And so you are exactly right. Things that will make people in the industrial side of the environmental services business leave is going to be the money. It's going to be how much they make because that's really what it comes down to. No matter what, their butt is in a seat driving a car. They don't care whose car. They care about how much they're making per car. But the other things that impact that, and it usually takes a professional leaving somewhere to find this out is they may pay you 50 cents more, but they may not care about safety regulations as much and may rush you to a job and then dock your pay whenever you don't get there in time. Or they may not care enough to do routine maintenance on the trucks or even provide you with the appropriate tools. So now that's coming out of your paycheck. And so there's a lot of things where whenever you do attract these individuals for talent, some of the best ways to retain them is to really package your benefits in a really great way to be like, hey, we pay for your tools. We do all of the preventative maintenance on your truck every night while you're asleep in bed and have a maintenance team doing it overnight on site. We have like those type of weird nuances that are very field niche knowledge. You only know if you've really gone to the site, talk to your customers, know your hiring manager. That's the type of stuff you're going to need to know to really recruit people in industrial, because even the way you do it is different. So like if you get to know your CDL drivers and you ask them like, hey, what do you listen to in the car? What are the radio stations? What are you listening to Spotify? Do you listen to podcasts all day on this 12-hour shift? If so, should we be sponsoring ads and podcasts so that way we're attracting more people that also do this? Mm-hmm. So there's just a lot of different nuances that are really intricate that create kind of high turnover. But if you know how to package the EVP appropriately and harness it for retention, you can really do some great work so long as you actually care and are interested in what drives that community.
Yeah, I also think like you brought up a good point, and this goes across all four lanes we're talking about and probably every type of recruiting, is finding those candidates where they're at, right? You know, if they're listening to podcasts in their truck for 12 hours or whatever that thing is, if they are, you know, need a job fair, if they, you know, because not LinkedIn isn't the end all be all, people, right? Yeah. Like sometimes these candidates need to be found in other ways. And I think industrial is definitely one of them. You know, and I know hospitality is as well, where, and then we're going to talk about healthcare, which is a whole different monster, but those all need a special plan of attack in how you find those candidates. It is not just a simple, I'm going to put something, I put job posts on LinkedIn and I'm going to get 200 applicants. It doesn't work like that, even in this job market today. And so that's a, you know, I think that is why we're having this conversation, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
About, because these are different types of roles that don't live like a traditional corporate recruiter might be able to just pump out candidates all the time.
Yeah.
And I actually like industrial recruiting as well. I find candidates in that space to be super warm and super usually
they're
just
gracious,
like cool.
Kind and grateful.
Yeah.
They really are.
And I enjoy that about that part of recruiting. Yeah. It's just so nice and different than what my normal day to day is. Right?
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah.
And hey, you want me to add another layer onto this?
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool? All right, let's do it. So a lot of times in industrial roles and companies, there is a whole nother element of two things. One, you have like unions, labor unions, and all of the CBA and relations and everything like that. Mm. So that's like a whole different layer whenever you think of recruiting. But then another one that is like 100% common is going to be the safety factor. So that is your EHS, which is environmental health and safety group, usually within the business. It's usually regulations based off of OPA. Good Lord, help us. If Oprah created these initiatives, no, I'm just kidding, OSHA, and the EPA, Lord bless me, and essentially all of these things impact one another, meaning like even whenever we think of the interview process, if my candidate doesn't have their TWIT card yet, but they have to go on site to interview, well, now we have to set up an interview where they have an escort every single place that they go on site, because we have to follow regulation. And so even things that are like, oh, okay, so they need their OSHA. Cool, cool, cool. Well, no, now that impacts all of your interview process as well,
right?
And how you incorporate and communicate and have that. So it's just like a whole bunch of different stuff that adds another layer that if you are strictly doing corporate, like honestly, the biggest thing with environmental corporate or any just enterprise in corporate is it's like moving, it's turning a cruise ship. It's a lot of red tape. It's going to move soupy slow.
Yeah.
It's not, we're not turning, you know, a jet ski like we are in a startup. It's now, we have all these different groups we have to check with before we can finally just announce one thing to one person. And that's probably the biggest difference. But
yeah, I remember dealing with the Twix card and all of those things. And like, that is that's a monster. And if they don't have it, and how are you going to get it for them? Because they may be qualified and they expire. And
yeah.
My goodness, it's just unbelievable some of the work you have to go to hire a forklift operator sometimes, you know what I mean?
But they have to do it because honestly, you know, some of these sites, another thing they don't tell you, they smell like junk. And half the time that you can't maintain people is because you're dealing with high hazardous waste. Even DuPont, I used to hire for a segment of DuPont and they had sulfuric acid. And that stuff, yeah, hey, what you doing?
Sorry.
That, I mean, I'll forgive you, but we're going to...
Just sorry.
I mean, it's all right. I mean, everyone's like, has a lot of questions about it. But anyway, but even the smell of sulfuric acid, it's like, you know, half the time that the processes have to be this way are because there are very interesting industry nuances, such as how a site smells, that impact it. I also had a site that was at Nestle, and everybody fought for that site because it smelled like chocolate and coffee all day. And they had
dream
it all day, too. Yeah.
The dream. All right. Let's go into healthcare. So I'm going to tell you, this probably is the hardest recruiting I've ever done is healthcare. And most of my clients in this part of my career end up in this space. And so I think because there's a couple things happening. First of all, there's a shortage everywhere. Right? There's not enough doctors, not enough nurses to take shifts. There's not enough anything anywhere.
Why do you think that is? Do you think it's education?
I do. I do think that people don't get into it as much as they used to.
Interesting.
You know, the insurance situations for doctors, right? They're making less, they're doing less. And I mean, they're spending 20 years in school. You know, like, and they come out and they have to deal with a PPO who won't pay them for the service they're rendering. It's not like it was before. It's definitely different. And talk about like, how about behavioral health people? You know, we're not, how much do you fight that system for so long and mental health in this country and all the things? Like, I don't know that, you know, I at one point wanted to be a doctor and thank God I bless every day that I'm not doing it. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in my doctor's office and she was like, okay. So we were just talking because I think she's kind of cool, by the way, you're out there, Dr. Vats. But she was telling me like she, by the HMO, she has 15 minutes to spend with each patient. So it's like 15 minutes to tell you, you know, what's going on with you or something. Like it just has become a really ridiculous kind of standards they're asked to live up to with less pay. And it's emotionally draining. And just like recruiting, you're dealing with people all day in the hardest moments of their life, right? And that takes on a lot. The mental anguish of doing that job is so hard. And so this becomes not just sometimes the volume of people you need to place in healthcare, but it's finding someone emotionally stable enough to deal with what environment you're about to put them in, whether it's a clinic, top university, top, you know, like Johns Hopkins or something like that. There are different, you know, kind of personalities can deal with different environments and figuring that out. And the culture around the hospital doesn't eat. It was funny. I was hiring a nurse one time and she was like, well, do the doctors respect nurses? Well, I didn't know the answer to that question. I had to go like do some research to figure out how valuable nurses were seen in that hospital system, right? And so it becomes a whole big turn. And then just finding these people. You know, if you've traditionally just done LinkedIn, a nurse with a 12-hour shift and she gets to sleep for 4 and be back on for 12 is not on LinkedIn. She's just not looking on LinkedIn. And doctors, you can forget about it. So you have to really tap into groups and job boards and universities and all of these other tools that are there to really find these people. And then they ignore reach out. And so then you have to come up with different tactics. I've made more phone calls in healthcare recruiting than I've done anything else, right? Because they're not responding to emails, but they have their phone on them during their 12-hour shift, and they can receive a text message, and they may respond or they may not, right? And then once you hire them, you usually have to get them credentialed, right? The background checks are deep and hard. Right? You have to make sure all their certifications are up to date. You have to do all of these other pieces that we wouldn't normally do for a regular candidate. Yes, they go through a background check. Usually takes, what, a day to get that back? Yeah. These credentialing sites take weeks. So you've hired the person. They can't even work for a month sometimes until they've gone through the credentialing system for that hospital. And we don't think about this stuff in regular recruiting, but in healthcare recruiting, it's essential into how you get this job, how you get the job done. And so, and traveling nurses, how much travel are they willing? I mean, I could go on and on about, but I also have seen some great things happen in healthcare recruiting with these huge sign-on bonuses because of the shortage. So I've seen, if you can be an advocate for your candidate in this space, they are willing to bend. And I think that's not always true in every kind of industry, but in healthcare, they're like, I don't care. Like, I need a nurse today. I need a doctor today. What is it going to take to get them here? Or if they're already credentialed through the system, it makes it even better. And you find that purple squirrel in healthcare, and they're willing to pay dividends to get that person in, especially if they have a very high rating. I probably do more research in healthcare recruiting about that person than I do. I mean, Googling them. Oh, yeah. Reviews. Like, I don't know if you do this, but when you go to the doctor before your assignment.
Yeah, I think about it, like, of course I was. That makes more sense. Like,
yeah, you would dig deep into, like, whether they were good and if they have complaints against them, right?
Yeah, duh. Lawsuits, hello.
Right.
Pending. So one question I have, tell us about, like, I feel like there's probably a lot of license nuances. Ugh. Like, that's one thing, like, state lines.
Yeah.
Are a much, like, state lines for even CDL don't matter anywhere near as much because they are interstate drivers most of the time. But I feel like for this, that would be, like, I have no clue how that even works or, like, how you do that.
Yeah, so, like, for doctors and nurses alike, and this may fall into other ranges, like ophthalmology, I'm not sure, but I know for nurses and doctors, which is primarily been my focus over time, though I've done a lot of nonprofit in that space as well, which is different as well. But nurses and doctors, they usually are licensed in more than one state just because of the nature of the healthcare world we live in right now. They've moved around or jumped hospitals or something like that. But it's usually very specific. Like, a doctor might be licensed in Boston, New York, and Florida. Right. And if he's not licensed, but he's the perfect fit, you need to get him licensed in that state. Now, the process, depending on the state, is either really short or really long. Right. And so you usually, when you're working with a system or an organization, they'll tell you, here's the states we're willing to get somebody licensed in. Here's the states we're not willing to because of the process and the cost. So I encourage people who do this type of recruiting to really dig in at the intake.
Yeah.
Right? I don't care if it's ChatGPT, you have to ask a million questions about healthcare recruiting, but that intake is long and the questions are different. It's usually not, what personality are you looking for to meet the culture? It becomes less about that and more about the back end stuff, about licensing and, you know, reviews and all of these other touch points. And what is that organization willing to do to get the right candidate? Then it becomes about the upfront stuff. Because if you can get nurses and physicians on the phone, you better have all the answers right then. Because they're going to be like, boom, 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 boom. Here's the questions I have. And if you don't know the answers, they're like, sorry, bye-bye, and you'll never get them again.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, the intake becomes huge.
Yeah. Well, and so, okay, let's see. So healthcare just sounds like a crazy beast.
It is. It's really not. What I think. No, it really is. No, healthcare is. It's, and that's why, you know, I was talking to our good friend Lori the other day about healthcare recruiting. You can't put somebody up all the time for a healthcare role as a recruiter unless they've done that space, because they won't know the right questions to ask. You know, so anyway, we could probably go on about all these industries for so long, and we'd love to hear your comments and questions about any of this as well on any of our social, or even just, you know, drop a question on our website. We'll be glad to answer. But before we wrap, you know what time it is. You know what time it is. It's the part of the show where we've rebranded it from It You Didn't Know Before to Talent Outside of the Box. Because that's what this segment is all about. So let's get into it. This is where we talk about the psychological and cognitive side of the topic we've been talking about. And so I will turn it over to Ashley.
All right. Well, guys, in today's episode, we talked about how recruiters cannot copy and paste their approach across industries. You have to understand the emotional, logistical, and cultural realities of each vertical. And knowing that context is truly how you build credibility. Curiosity builds trust. And if you want to stand out as a recruiter, know the game that you're playing and the rules that it comes with. And so because we have had the great privilege to work across a few different industries, one significant thing that Desiree and I have recognized was a shared valuation of the qualities that they sought in their candidates. So although each industry is intricate, nuanced, and different, we did see a few running themes whenever they wanted to see candidates. And so they said these terms in many different ways, but these are essentially how we chalked up the top three qualities that hiring managers are wanting and that we've seen consistently across industry. So number one is going to be an autonomous learner. So this is someone that whenever you ask them, hey, how do you figure something out when you don't know it? Do they say, oh, I go ask my friend? Do they say, I Google it? Do they say, I just sit and wait for someone to explain it to me? That type of individual's answer lets us know a few things. And if the answer is, I Google it, I seek out the response, I go for it, that is kind of indicative of an autonomous learner. Autonomous learners are proactive. They're polymaths. They're curious. They will actively teach themselves how to do things and get things done because it's an intrinsic valuation to them. They enjoy learning and they seek it out autonomously. The next one is going to be grit. Grit is a very, very big quality that we hear of all the time. The way that this is most often defined and how we've kind of bucketed it is perseverance. They're looking for work ethic. They're looking for stick-to-itness. They want to see people who can go through the ringer and come out the other side and stay continued going. And as someone who has the work ethic of it's not, if it's not good, it's not done. And they continue on until that point. And then lastly, one of the skills that we've seen just all over the place is going to be communication styles. So these are people who simply understand boundaries. They get professionalism. They have executive presence. They know when to be a strategic partner. They know when to be a listener. They know when to be a guider or a questioner or someone who's pushing back. They have an excellent flow of how they communicate, and the medium and the method at which they do that matters. So these are the three qualities that we have seen over and over again that managers ultimately are looking for. May not have a name on it, but this is what we've labeled them. So if you're a candidate, this is what you need to have. If you're a recruiter, hey, this might help you find what it is that you're looking for with your manager. All right, guys, that's awesome. Talent Outside the Box.
That is great. That is great. I even learned something every time we have those. So listen
Did
up
you?
For those.
What was it this time, though?
Like, it was the grit one.
Really?
What I mean, I know it, but I don't know the, you know, I don't
I mean, it's psychological, weird stuff.
Yes. I know. You want to be educated on this show, you listen to Ashley. If you just want to have me ramble on,
pooey.
You can listen to me. Just joking. Anyway, that's it for today, folks. Thank you for joining us on this crazy roller coaster we call Talentless. Listen to us wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on most of the social media sites at Talentless Podcast. And guess what? We have Patreon now. So if you really want to support, please go to Talentless Podcast channel and on Patreon. And there you're going to find bloopers, hot takes, and all the things that you don't get to see. So you get to see all the crazy stuff behind the making of this show. We would love the support. And until next time, from hiring fails to hiring wins, we'll see ya.
Bye.
I'm Desiree.
And I'm Ashley. And thanks for listening to Talentless, where we keep it real in the world of HR.
If you loved what you heard, don't forget to hit subscribe and give us a follow on Blue Sky, Instagram, and LinkedIn. We're here to keep your feed packed with everything you need to level up in recruitment and HR.
And be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
And hey, don't miss out. Sign up for our newsletter for fresh insights and follow us on socials to stay connected with both Ashley and me.
Thanks again for joining us on Talentless. Until next time, we'll see you then.